Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to another quarantine early work. Luckily for us, some builders have just started bashing a building to pieces next door to my house. There's literally a sign outside that says blasting in progress, which matches my blasting in progress sign outside my equally noisy for different reasons house. Anyway, I'm still finding pockets of silence to record early works in because frankly, it's all I have and it's all you have. This week's episode is with an actual poet. Finally, after all my years of writing poetry, all my weeks of reading it to unqualified comedians who don't know what the fuck they're talking about, still scoring me out of 5 on 3 categories, I get to present my work to an actual poet for some proper official feedback. The poet in question is Charlie Cox. She wrote She Must Be Mad. It was her debut collection that did very well. And then she followed it up with another book called Validate Me. I recommend them both if you like poetry. And if you're listening to this, you probably don't. But get them anyway. What she brought for us today wasn't particularly poem-based, but it definitely had some poetic elements. There's some little lyrics in there. There's some rhymes at the end. It's pretty poetic stuff in the end. But overall, she is our second fan fiction guest. So there's fanfic to look forward to. And there's a twist in the fan fiction that almost rivals the twist in Glenn Moore's Gangster Story. So you've got that to look forward to. I hope you enjoy it. I'll see you on the other side. Goodbye. Joining me this week on another lockdown episode of Early Work is Charlie Cox. Hello, Charlie.
Hello, Rhys James.
For those of you that don't know, listeners, Charlie Cox is probably best known for when she came to watch me at the Soho Theatre. Maybe 2 years ago? 2 years ago, was it?
Yeah, it was on Valentine's Day.
Oh, was it? Yeah. Oh, sorry. It was, that, I didn't remember that because that wasn't significant for me, but good to know that you...
Oh, that hurts my poor broken heart.
Charlie, if I had to guess what you were like at school, which I do because it's the first format point of the show, I have written the following. Well, first of all, surname is Cox, so that can't have helped.
No. No, really, really horrific. My middle initial is also R, so I am C-R Cox.
Oh my god. How long did you try and keep the middle initial a secret before people found out?
Well, I mean, a really long time actually, and quite successfully, until I addressed it with my father and said, why the fuck have you done that? That's really cruel. And he thought it was the best thing that he'd ever done with his life was give his daughter such incredible initials. And every time somebody got in our car at school when we gave them a lift, he would tell them, did you know her initials are C.R. Cox? And a poor 14-year-old girl would look quite bewildered. And then it got out.
Oh my god, so it was a prank. So your name is a prank from your own father.
Better still, my middle initial stands for Remy. And he then also has led me to believe that my middle name is Remy because I was conceived on Remy Martin Cognac. So I am just one giant joke. I'm one drunken joke.
Oh my god. Are you an only child?
I am. Is it surprising?
he got the prank out of his system.
Yeah.
And he thought, I don't need any more kids. I've gone all my pranks in one name.
What an asshole. What an asshole.
I can't believe it. Well, that's only the first point. Second point is, I know that you wrote poetry from quite a young age, and from experience, people don't do that unless they have to. So it has informed this slightly. But then, like, 2 days ago, you posted a picture of you as, like, an 8-year-old, and you did look very cheeky and like the sort of person who would be constantly back-chatting to teachers, but in a light-hearted way where they kind of liked you for it. I mean, that might not be true. However, I've put, as you got a bit older as a teenager, my guess is you had a full emo phase, scene kid haircut, eyeliner that's a full circle, badges on your backpack, too many bracelets, Panic at the Disco ticket stuck to your bedroom mirror. I think your daily routine was a battle through school, go to the park straight after school to smoke on the swings, buy an Enemy magazine to look at pictures of the kooks, then back home to your room to send a million texts. Am I correct?
Fucking hell! I'm going to stop paying so much money for therapy and just start calling you instead. There's absolutely none of that that isn't true. Jeez. Yeah, actually. No, they were for Two Door Cinema Club. So, you know, it was a softer emo edge. That was more... It was a more indie alternative route for me. But yeah, I bleached my hair blonde, cut it so it was like a pixie cut, and then shaved a side. That was cool. My art teacher, who I've never forgiven for this, but was so on the nose. Maybe you two would be friends, actually, for such cutting remarks. She said, God, it's just such a shame that you take your feelings out on your hair. What a bitch. What an absolute bitch. Yeah, that was really cruel. I did used to battle through school, go to the corner shop. Oh my God. Outside Oak and Grove, get someone outside to buy me cigarettes whilst I picked up a copy of Enemy magazine. We'd go and sit behind a tree, me and one of the boys from a couple of years above, and I would smoke and pretend I knew everything about music.
What about badges? Badges on your backpack?
Yes, I actually had a badge maker, so they were they were badges of
my own
design. Which
I thought the badges on your backpack line was a bit insulting. I didn't realise I wasn't nearly accurate enough of how much of a loser you were.
Oh, I was writing poetry at a young age. I was obviously a massive loser.
What sort of badges would you make?
It depended on who I fancied at the time. So depending on which boy in sixth form that I thought was particularly fit that week, I would make something that made me seem more attractive to him. So it would either be, one week it might be really sort of like loosely football related. So I would find some, God, I'd find some vintage, like old pictures of various famous footballers, make them into badges. Thought that was really cool. some were song lyrics.
That's song lyric badges.
Song lyric badges. Some of which were my own song lyrics, just to prove that I had a personality and took my art very seriously. And others, I think at the time, were probably, what was that band called? Do you remember the Cat Empire?
No, what are you talking about? The Cat Empire.
Yep, great band. It was just a variation of edgy indie bands that I had probably listened to half of one song of, picked out a lyric and thought, yeah, that's niche enough for people to go, wow, she's really cool.
Were Cat Empire a popular band at your school?
No, absolutely nobody had heard of them. So Obviously that did not work out for me. They just thought I was.
And what about when you say your own song lyrics? Are they songs that got made, or are they you just wrote lyrics for a band that didn't exist?
No. So my best friend at school was a singer. She could sing. She wasn't a singer. We were 14, and I would write lyrics to the tunes of popular songs, and she would re-record them for me.
Oh, actual existing songs. You wrote parody songs
basically, but obviously they weren't parody Rhys, they were vastly improved versions of popular songs, in my opinion.
They were deadly serious, completely earnest. Mm-hmm. You know what? I had completely forgotten that I also did that. I was trying to sort of imply that you were lame, but my best mate at school was in a band. The band was called Without Reason. And this is the worst part. They didn't even ask me to write them lyrics. I just always did write lyrics and poems. And then I pitched them some lyrics and was like, what about this? And I think they used two lines from it. And then, like, obviously to make me feel better, they were like, he would just always bring up like, God, those lines you wrote for our song are just great. It's a shame Without Reason sort of disbanded quickly after, as people.
What was the reason?
Well, I don't know. It was in a little period of my life as a child where ska was quite popular. That never really took off again, did it? But there was a little period where ska came back, and then so everyone was doing little ska. But basically what would happen is that someone at school from a young age had been learning the trumpet. So then when everyone started making bands, the trumpeter was like, well, I want to be in one. So then they had to be a ska band because everyone else can play the guitar and drums. And so my lyrics there, which was something like, the show, life goes on just like the show. And then something about, I saw this line on a TV show on Trouble TV where someone said it felt like they were bungee jumping from the top of the sky. And I used to just plagiarize that in everything. I used to put that in everything I wrote. Bungee jumping from the top. It was like a reality show. Someone was like, God, it was like bungee jumping from the top of the sky. And I was like, God, that's so deep.
Beautiful.
So then I put that in everything, yeah. I didn't put it on a badge, though, and put it on my backpack, to be fair.
That's a huge shame.
So you were writing poems. You were making badges.
No end to my talents.
You were writing song lyrics. Is there any other sort of, were there any other creative outlets you had at school? Did you perform ever?
No, so this will shock you. And the world over, I was very shy at school. The first 3 years of secondary school, I was a massive geek. Not surprising. And then I hit puberty and got boobs and straightened my hair, and the popular girls welcomed me into the fold. And I got to sit with them on the school field at lunchtime and giggle at boys kicking footballs at our heads, and I thought I'd made it. So I then sort of grew this personality of being an arsehole, and had to keep all of my creative outlets private in case people thought I was lame.
Oh, shit. Yeah, I know what you mean. Because creativity is not encouraged in those environments.
No, it's really, really lame. But it did mean that I found an online community of people who became my secret friends, and I would write them stories.
You'd write stories for people on the internet?
Yeah. So people would put in requests if they fancied a guy at school and they couldn't quite pluck up the courage to talk to him, but they just obsessed over him so much, I would write them personalized fan fictions.
Oh my God. For what? Commissions?
For fun. Rhys, for fun.
God, so you've been an influencer since you were six.
Yeah. Came out of the womb with a hashtag spawn.
Non-stop influencing since birth. This is incredible.
I just can't help it.
I did this. I mean, this is mad. The parallels here are ridiculous. I was constantly writing, creating shit at school, and then I was in a group of the lads that played football, so that wasn't encouraged, and they didn't want to know about it. So I took to the internet. I entered short story competitions for a little while that I think you had to pay to enter, that was all a Ponzi scheme. But also, I joined a website called Project Rockstar, which was... Why have you gasped? Have you heard of it?
I think I remember Project Rockstar.
Well, then you probably remember me. I was a pretty big deal on the forums. Project Rockstar...
I didn't recognize you.
Project Rockstar was a... this like website where you are like managed, it's like an online game where you're like managing bands and like you have to try and get them to number one in the charts. It's all algorithmic, but like you also got extra points if you like designed a good album cover or stuff like that, or like you, it was all about getting money, but it was all fake. There was no real money in it. But then on the forums you'd like have these chats, and if you said something funny on there, then the admins would give you star points, which is like an early retweet essentially. It was like retweets and favorites before that was a thing. And I became obsessed with not only getting star points, but becoming an admin. I was desperate to be an admin. I was like 13, power mad, desperate to be an admin. So what I did was I saw that the way they made people admins was if they would translate the website for them into other languages. So I told them that I could speak Greek.
And of course
I would
you did.
Translate the website into Greek. And then they said, can you just like, just as an example, can you translate this page? And then I sent them back a translation of it. And they said, okay, well, you can't be an admin because you obviously can't speak Greek. And I was like, what do you mean? This is all Greek. And they were like, it's like a 7,000 word page and you sent it back within 2 minutes. I mean, obviously you just put this through freetranslation.com, which is exactly what I had done. And then I had to set up a new account and then try and become an admin on that account. But then they saw I had the same IP address. Basically, I was just this 13-year-old power mad Starpoint lunatic, desperate for friends on the internet, somehow losing that as well.
That makes me feel so much better. The parallels really are quite terrifying because within my personalized fan fiction, I was a big George Sampson fan. Still on my list of people.
What's he up to? What's he up to now? Is he still dancing in the rain?
He's dancing in the rain of my tears and heart that he's not mine. I think he's in musical theatre now. I say think, I know, I can probably tell you where he's supposed to be right now, but he's not.
Oh, seriously, this is still ongoing. You still genuinely hold a candle.
I think my obsession now is supposed to be some sort of comedy arm of my personality, but that's just me in absolute denial that maybe I'm still in love with him. Maybe.
How old is George Sampson?
He must be 27 this year.
Right, come on. There's no must be about this.
He's 27 in
June.
When's
his birthday?
He's 27 in June. I hate my life. God, I'm such a sad individual. But
look, that's what this podcast is all about, finding out how obsessed people are with George Sampson. To be honest, you're the first guest that's actually brought that up. But, you know, it's been a pretty George Sampson-based quiz so far. So you wrote stuff about George Sampson, and that wasn't for someone else. You wrote that for yourself.
I was part of a forum for George Sampson, and the admins on the forum were gods. That's all I wanted. I wanted admin status on this forum. And to do that, I realized that, you know, the more popular you got within the forum threads of, you know, niche George Sampson facts or, you know, whatever, or, you know, pictures of you as close to him as humanly possible, or finding out his sister's phone number, all of things. We did.
Oh my God. Wow.
Yeah. I used to have his mum on Facebook.
Dark.
Until about a year ago. And I realized and thought that's something that shouldn't exist, is it? No. That's,
yeah.
I think he doesn't even still speak to his mum.
Maybe because she added loads of his fans on Facebook and let them get too close to him.
Yeah, I'd probably break up with my mum over that too. She's just selling his dirty underwear. But yeah, I realized that I needed ultimate popularity on this forum to appease my ego, I suppose, and, you know, also to get that one step closer to marrying George.
I do like the logic that George Sampson would only marry someone who is the admin of the fan fiction group. As in, it's already insane for a celebrity to marry someone who's writing fan fiction about them. But him going, no, I wouldn't do that. That's a bit far. But if they're the admin, if they're running the group, then fine. They've clearly got a sense of control and power and authority.
Exactly. And it's the ultimate respect. You know, wow, of all the girls, I want to know that if I'm going to pick one of them, it's the one that really cares the most about myself and the community around her. You know, what selflessness she must possess. Not only is she an incredibly talented writer, she's also very logical.
She's willing to punish people who break the rules of this community. What was it about George Sampson that was so appealing? Other than, so presumably you were attracted to him, but what, his dance moves? The fact he was wearing wet clothes?
I mean, I was 11 when this began, so I don't even think it was any kind of sexual desire. I loved his sob story. I thought that was very nice.
What was his sob story?
Just that he was poor, and then
Billy Elliot. It was, yeah, Billy Elliot, wasn't it? I forgot.
And then bullied, and then he had a spine problem. I'm really paraphrasing here, but you know. you don't need to know all of his woes because there are so many positives we can talk about. But yeah, I don't know. I just loved him. I loved him so deeply. I really thought that he was just the best person in the entire world. And I think as well, because I was so desperately uncool and not at all athletic, the fact that he was a street dancer might give me a bit of like credibility, but
so
that was
because
a misplaced wish.
Because you didn't do well in PE, yeah. You thought
if you got
off with a boy who knows how to front flip while dancing to a remix by Mint Royale of Singing in the Rain, that you would suddenly, all the PE kids, all the athletes at school would respect you just based on the nepotism of George Sampson. A completely different field, a completely different sport. You thought, oh, fair enough. All right.
Look, okay, I get it. We don't need to hammer this home. I wasn't thinking particularly straight on any of this, but still, I wrote some, which now I realise is really depressing. I said to you before we did this, I was really excited that I'd found this story that I'd written, and every week girls would message going, what's happened next? I've got to hear the next spin. I was like, yeah, I'm on to a Pulitzer Prize. This is going to get published and then he's going to fall in love with me. Again, I just thought that the more obsessed I was, the more likely he'd be obsessed with me, which
so
is
have you
still
got some...
to this day how I go about my dating life. Yes,
have
I
have you
do.
Got something we can listen to?
Are you ready?
I'm ready. Wait, first of all, little bit of context. How many... chapter, they called chapters fan fiction, how many chapters did you write?
I think 17, and that was because the fucking hell, that's because the story was called 17, and that's because that was the number, his door number.
Oh my god. His door number. Whoa. did you know the street?
Yeah.
This is, I mean, what you're saying is genuinely incriminating.
Yeah, I'm slowly starting to realise that. You know, when I talked about this when I was younger, it wasn't at all. It was just sweet and a bit strange.
No,
now,
you were never going to go there.
No,
but you wanted to know.
I was never going to go there, was I? No, don't be daft.
All right, let me ask you this. Okay, did you go there?
I did go there, yeah.
Oh, you did go there. Yeah. Fuck me. And do what? What did you do when you were there?
There was... there was a group of us. Why am I so willingly giving this information away? There was a group of us that would go there every weekend, and we'd sit outside and hope that he'd have to go out and get milk or something. And he was very nice to us. He was very amiable.
So what you're telling me is that because of you, George Sampson has been in lockdown for decades.
Yeah. Well, you know, then the restraining order came in, so it was fine. And
yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I can't handle 17 chapters, but I would love to hear the selected samples from the George Sampson 17 story, if possible.
Right. Actually, no, let's start with the beginning so you can get a real sense of tension.
Yes,
how this all begins. It wasn't the fact it was dark that worried her the most or made her feel the most disorientated. It was the fact she knew exactly where she was and she had no idea what to do with herself next. Street lamps flickered like fireflies and she looked up at the door. 17, she whispered. Even before she knew about this place, 17 was an important number to her. 17 people in her life that let her down. I was 12, the age she knew she could get away from things. And now, most importantly, it's what brought her here. Just do it, Iz. This is what you've been waiting for your whole life. His face appeared in her head. She had not once met him, but she had studied his image ever since the first time she heard his name. These days, it was down to YouTube and talent shows she knew about people, which was hardly the romantic way she planned on finding out about the person she wished to spend the rest of her life with when she was small. But his voice was high and smiley, and she was convinced. 17 places I could be right now. Just do it. She rang the bell. She wasn't even sure if it was the right one. She just had a feeling and promised herself if it was the wrong one, she would go home. Hello? Is anyone there? Hello? The voice from the intercom was unknown, and just as she was about to walk away, she saw a light turn on in the nearest window. A head popped out the curtain. Oh, hi. May I come in, please? Who is it? I'm sorry, I don't recognise you. It's Isabella. I mean, Is. Look, I know you don't know me, but please, just 5 minutes. The door buzzed and she sighed. Her clothes were dripping wet and she looked most embarrassed. A lady was peering through a small crack in the door she made by slowly opening it. As most cracks are made, you'd assume. This was London. She could have been anyone. But the minute Iz got to the top of the stairs, she knew exactly who she had come face to face with. A motherly figure stood there, and only instinct could tell she wanted to get her out of those wet clothes and get her dry. I'm Iz. Yes, I gathered from the intercom. Yes, I'm ever so sorry to trouble you and everything at this time of night. She slumped and looked down at the woman's slippers. It's just, I've nowhere else to go. I'm sorry, love, but I know exactly what you're implying. Mum? Iz's heart thumped, raced and thwacked with passion. A dark shadow appeared inside the hallway. A head appeared out of the dark. Oh my God! Although she tried to say it under her breath, the reason she was there had all of a sudden become apparent. Who is it? Just go back inside. It's just some silly, silly girl. Look, it's, I'm sure someone's worrying about you. It was him. It was George. My screaming turned to excessive tears. I like the change of, yeah, you best come inside. The neighbours will complain. So, yeah, that's a bit of how, I...
Oh my God. Okay, there's a lot to unpack there. It's so funny. I mean, the Freudian slip to the, to my...
Oh, no.
At the end of that. My screaming.
I mean, she is screamed.
I like that you said if it was the wrong house, then she would go home. I was like, well, yeah, obviously, I mean, you're not going to come in. You can't come in to someone else's
like,
house.
Well, you're quite fit. I suppose I could stay with you instead.
Well, yeah. Well, it's number 17. I mean, I'm not going to. I've made the
exactly.
journey.
The coincidence has already been established. What a waste for me to leave.
I like that you turn up in, or Isabella, sorry, turns up in dripping wet clothes, which is, yeah, dress like the guy you love. That's the old phrase, isn't it? Dress for the husband you want, dress like him, dripping wet clothes. And no wonder as well, you reacted like it was a bit weird and creepy that the mum's instinct was to get you out of those dripping wet clothes. You got to bear in mind, this is George Sampson's mum. She does nothing but get children out of wet clothes, okay? That's pretty much her whole job, is constantly going, come on, let's get you out of those wet clothes. It's become a catchphrase for her.
I was really playing her to her love language.
Exactly, yeah, going, oh... It was one of us. Yeah, exactly. And the only other thing I noticed is that quite a lot in the intro to that, you use the phrase, just do it, which to me implies that you were a young influencer and you were sponsored by Nike for this whole this whole piece of fan fiction is Nike propaganda. Hashtag ad at the end of that. This is in the pre-hashtag ad days. But, you know, I wouldn't put it past you.
You are correct. I was a trailblazer. I was before my time, Reese, and...
You and Michael Jordan back in those days.
Yeah, it was.
Were the only ones? Fair enough. So that's chapter one.
Yeah.
How does this escalate? I mean, maybe can you give us something from, like, chapter seven?
Okay, so basically, just, you know, to get you up to speed, because I know you're dying to know what happened next, she was let in to George's flat and moved in with him. obviously. And he doesn't quite know why she's so erratic and strange, but there's a phone that she has concealed in a drawer that he's recently found, and that phone is going to reveal why she has run away from her life. But, you know, they seem to be pretty chill about the fact that this 17-year-old girl has run away and landed herself.
And just moved in immediately to George Sampson's house.
Moved in immediately, asked absolutely no questions. And yeah. So, you ready?
This is just like never been more ready.
Why is this so scary? Okay. George, can I have a word, please? Leslie, his mum, voice boomed, just in case you didn't know, but I'm sure you did, voice boomed around the flat, and she worried about Iz upsetting the neighbours. God, mum, it's early. Keep it down. It's 10 past bloody 11. We were supposed to be at that magazine shoot a whole hour ago. Oh, really? He tried to sound unconvinced and uninformed, although he knew his mother could see past lies like that. George, ever since that girl has stepped foot into this house, you've changed. Oh, come on, mum. This is extreme. Anyway, don't shout. She'll hear you. She's been through a tough time. Tread careful. She can't bloody hear me, George. I sent her to get some milk. You can't pick and choose, you know. Ugh, sometimes, boy. She was really up on this, and missing the shoot wasn't the first one. There had been others, which just so happened to be forgotten about, mislaid and uncared for. His social status between stars had gone right down, and press hadn't cited him for days. She's gone on her own. No, George, I sent some fairies with her too. Does she know where she's going? She managed to find this place, all right? She'll find the corner shop fine. I'm just saying, George, I love her to pieces, as much as you. This random girl we took in 3 days ago. She's a charm to have, but seriously, just because she's here doesn't mean you have to drop things. Your sister's coming down tomorrow. She'll keep her company. Okay, it's just... George walked out of the room, his head in his hands. I think... What, love? Nothing, mum. It's just, I think I love her.
Oh, God. Mm. Great. And you weren't an admin. I mean, this is admin level stuff, surely.
I agree. I also wasn't arrested, so let's be thankful for small mercies.
There's something very visually funny about someone walking out of a room with their head in their hands. I mean, it's not really something you do while moving.
Really uncomfortable. Yeah, it's just a walking thinking man. Is that George Sampson?
I like that in this story, George has dropped everything for you. He says he loves you twice. But as we know from the chapter one, that is you. You've destroyed his career in a way.
Mm.
So the press is all gone. He's lost his focus, and now all he cares about is
me.
Is kind of you, yeah. Is that what you wanted?
Yeah.
I
don't understand the issue you're raising here.
Surely you wanted him to continue to be famous though, because you liked that he was a public figure. Or did you just liked him, so you just went, no, your whole life is now me?
Yeah, no, I think the love was so tender, true and deep that I was way past the fact that he was famous. I loved him for who he was deep down as a person, and clearly I was the only person who understood who he really was, and I needed to get him away from the aggression of fame and media. So yeah, I sabotaged
his life.
But
did you want him to keep dancing?
For me, yeah, like a just pet.
Private dancer.
Yeah.
You just wanted George Sampson as your own private dancer, a live-in private dancer, but it's not that he lives in your house. You live in his family home.
Yes. His flat with his mum.
Absolutely astonishing. Okay, let's hear that. I need to know how this concludes. I need to know how this story, where it gets to.
Okay.
Do you have the end? Do you have the end of it, or maybe?
Okay, no, I've got the perfect bit for you. It's making my entire body cringe. I just want to vomit.
Which chapter is this?
We've gone ahead 4 chapters. This is chapter 9. She's okay. So they're now madly in love with each other, but pretending that, you know, that's not apparent. And she says that she wants to go meet his fans, because they're all outside her house.
And how would she know
that?
I have
no idea. Absolutely no idea. The creative license here is just really quite stunning. Such promise from an early age. Then she announces within this that they're all very talented. And she actually recognises one of them from her singing career that she's only just brought up.
Wow.
And she starts to sing him a song, of which I have written the lyrics for.
Oh, perfect. Perfect. Of course you have. Imagine they'd have been printed on badges all over the school.
God. And I think this is supposed to be like an interlude into the next bit of the story. So, you know, just to mix it up a bit, instead of having another bit of prose, I thought I'll just throw in a bit of poetic storytelling as well. And oh, Jesus Christ, and it goes like this. Their life was almost fairy tale, but not enough for fans to tell. And this story would be prettier if it was in poetry and lyrical. So I've decided their lives will rhyme just like once upon a time, just a prelude of effects. Pardon. She had not received one single text until today. It was short and it read, "We miss you all. Our love, come home." She wondered why the SIM was put back in her phone and looked at George. Their eyes met upon a gaze again. Les and Rosie knew they were no longer friends, but nearly lovers from the future. No signs of blogs on fans' computers. And they were happy and they were sweet. Life was good and it was neat. But what happened next would spoil the dream. Just see what three girls can achieve.
Wow. I mean, it's all fucking insane. So the sim has been put back into her phone by someone else.
Yes. And she's now thinking that her big secret's about to be revealed.
So what, Les and Rosie. obviously we've skipped ahead, but who are they?
That's his mum and sister. Obviously.
Oh, Leslie, right, I see. Okay, cool. Yeah. I was thinking, are they your parents getting in touch to say, where the hell have you gone? Why have you moved away to live with the dancer from Britain's Got Talent? I think you're really playing to the audience who are reading this by talking about how you just got to get to know these girls on the doorstep. Sure, I've got a way in because I'm different.
Just wanted to be an admin. I was trying to state this, I think. It's like, look, I am different and he does like me more, but I'm on our side.
Yeah, exactly. You are. I mean, I'm amazed you're not a politician. I mean, that is a manifesto, what you've written there. You've written policies, essentially, to the George Sampson fan fiction community.
Yeah, it's why I should rule them all.
So
I agree.
This is where it starts getting tricky in the story, right? This is where jeopardy really starts coming into the story a little bit more.
Yeah.
So how does this manifest? What happens at the end of the story? Presumably it's a happy ever after, but like, where does it get properly tricky?
So I'm going to paraphrase most of this for you because it's just so bloody long. really not worth reading. But basically, she finds out that it's George that's put the SIM back in her phone, and she feels ultimately betrayed by her one true love. And he has read some text messages from her parents saying, "Please come home. We're worried about you." And he goes to call, but never quite gets there. And then the thing in the end of the poem about three girls is these three girls from where she lived turn up to sit with the fans outside George's flat and reveal that she has killed someone and that's why she's on the run.
Oh my god, what are you? That's it. I mean, as far as twists,
deadly serious. Yeah.
Is the fan fiction world famous for twists like that?
No, that's why I was just so damn good at it.
I mean, to be fair, if I was a detective and I was looking for a murder suspect, the last place I'm looking is George Sampson's house. It's the absolute bottom of the list. How did George Sampson react to the fact you're a murderer?
He forgave her. He was like, you know what? You know, I've fallen so madly in love with you and you're clearly a complex individual and I care about you. So don't worry about it. We'll get through this together.
So this goes far beyond what I thought this fan fiction was, which is just you've written a thing about a boy that you're obsessed with, a famous boy you're obsessed with, and you've made him love you. Not only that, you've made him forgive you for the worst act a person can do.
The
love
child.
That you've written
can
in this.
I just reiterate, I was 12 or 13 when I wrote this story.
So it comes to the point where I must score your work. The George Sampson series on three categories. Those categories are, of course, originality, pure teen horniness, and Mickey Mouse Club, Ryan Gosling, Ryan Goose score. How close is it to your work now? Does it show the potential of a future star? So, first of all, originality. Look, It's pretty original. I mean, I wasn't really big in the fanfic scene. I don't know if you heard, but I was quite busy managing rock bands and trying to translate it into Greek, so I didn't have time for that. But it isn't similar to the only other fanfiction I've heard, which is Everwood fanfiction. It's not very similar to that at all. So I'd say it's pretty original. You've written yourself into the story as this girl called Isabella. You've got the whole repetition of the 17 thing. It's like, it's poetic in that, and then there's a little, I like the element that you're turning up in dripping wet clothes because you're trying to, you know, impress him, dress for the job you want. I like that she says phrases like, George, can I have a word? Which is quite an adult phrase for a 12-year-old to be using. Originality, so I'm going to give it. And also you put song lyrics in there to mix it up because you knew, oh, if it's all prose, people will get bored. And you decided.
A twist. She's a murderer.
She is a murderer. That is a good twist. I mean, I don't know how original the twist is, but it's definitely for fan fiction. It's very original. Yeah, of course. Sorry, how could I neglect the twist? So originality, I'll go 4 out of 5 for originality. Pure teen horniness. Now, whether or not it was intentional, the horniness is off the scale. I mean, it's you literally break into a man you fancy's house. Start living there with him and his mum and destroy his career so that he will fall in love with you. And it's not revealed till much later that actually this is all just a ruse because you're a killer on the run. So 5 out of 5. It'd be insane to give it anything less than 5 out of 5.
Thank you.
I've got to go 5 out of 5. Mickey Mouse Club, does it show the potential for a future star? I mean, it's deep. So you've written some poetry that's got some depth to it. A lot of there's poetry you've written that's about... Actually, okay. So you've written poetry about heartbreak quite a lot. Mm-hmm. You've also written a lot of poetry about technology and looking at your phone and wanting to, you know, potentially escape that trap. This is a story about tricking a man into falling in love with you. And the way that it gets resolved is he puts a SIM card in your phone.
Whoa.
So, I mean, it's pretty... I mean, there's definitely elements there. I mean, it's...
That's just...
So I'm going to go 4 out of 5. Yes! It's got to be 4 out of 5 for Mickey Mouse Club. That's a very high score.
I'm so thrilled. I couldn't be happier. This is the best thing that's happened to me
13,
all month.
13 out of 15. I mean, some people prefer to get a low score because of what these categories are, but it's good to see that you've taken it in your stride.
Look, I'm
so
I'm
nicely.
Proud.
13
I'm
out of
proud.
15.
Thank you very
it's
much.
Very good score. Now it comes to the time where I must share something I wrote with you. And this is a poem, of course. I wanted to get some proper poetry analysis for the first time on this show. So this is a poem. It's called In Truth. It's on brand. I chose it for you specifically because of some of the things we just talked about.
Thank you.
It's on brand. And I was older than I'd like to admit when I wrote this. Okay.
I'm so
ready?
Excited.
In Truth. When I take out my phone and stare nothingness into the menu, that's when I know I'm alone. Nothing inhabits me, vacant perpetually, desperately texting these messages meant to be met with collective acceptance and glee at my heterogeneity. Yet I'm neglecting to reference the deity, playing me, baying for blood as it's slaying my brothers and taking my love as it hates none above my complacency. You take my place and see whether your face can be chased base and tastefully placed by this blatant fiend, racing to waste and erase all my dreams, hastening now to disgrace all that seems holy. The true nature of lonely is seen on the screen of the true one and only.
Oh, that's not fair.
Why is it not? What do you mean?
Well, because, you know, that's actually bloody brilliant. And everything I've just read you is suggesting that my future might not be so bright.
Yeah, but you were 12. I was 20.
So, okay.
Even the fact I wrote that at 20, I find embarrassing. I think it's pretty on brand that I end a poem calling myself the true one and only.
Yeah, love it. I mean, that's some balls.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I thoroughly enjoyed that you were your own muse and that was revealed at the end. Thought that was pretty cool.
It wasn't that wasn't meant to be a twist. That's just me revealing too much about my thought process.
But it's got great cadence. Like yeah, that's right. Your poetry word. It's the only one I know. The meter. Very, very good. It was like a rap. It was angry. What was it that was bothering you so much? That's what I would have learned more of from there. I felt like you found a rhyming scheme and you ran with the rhyme as opposed to getting your message across. It wasn't your best piece of storytelling, I will say.
How about this then? Okay, see if you can find meaning in this. You take my place and see whether your face can be chaste, base, and tastefully placed. What the fuck? I mean, chaste for a start.
Oh,
I don't know how that applies.
I'm imagining a lovely chicken baster.
Oh, no, it's base as in B-A-S-E. But, I mean, based would be better. If I see whether you can be basted like a lovely roast.
Like a gorgeous Christmas turkey. Yeah, no, you really lost me on that bit. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's nonsense. It's absolute drivel.
Like most of my work.
I need you to score that now on the same categories. First of all, originality, 4 out of 5. What are you thinking?
I mean, I have just published a whole collection centered around that idea. So I'm going to give both of us a 1 in that respect. I don't think it's...
Charlie, I think you'll find I did this 9 years ago. I'm the true one and only. I don't know if I made that clear.
No, you did make that clear. But also, I wrote my collection when I was 24. So I win. So I stand by 1 point. I'm sorry.
Fine. One out of five for originality. Pure teen horniness.
Oh, I'm going to give that a 4. You're angry. Like that's something pent up deep inside you. And I'm just going to assume that's
Yeah,
passion.
I was. It's mad because I was 20, so I wasn't even a teen. But I do say I look at my phone and I can't remain chaste. So I would agree with a 4 out of 5.
Yeah, it's a 4 or 4.5 because also the way that you really get into the rhyme and the rhythm of it is, yeah, that quickening of pace. Yeah, too many puns for me here. I'm gonna, yeah, 4.5.
Okay, 4.5. And finally, Mickey Mouse Club, Ryan Gosling, Ryan Goose score. How close is it to my work now? Does it represent my current vibe?
Oh, I suppose it does a little bit. It does, do you know what? I do think it does in a sense. You know, you're taking, it's observational. I'm gonna say 3.
3, okay, I'll take it. So 8.5 out of 5 plays to 13 out of 15. Sorry, 8.5 out of 15 to 13 out of 15. So you win. But
I win at being the biggest loser.
You win, yeah, we're both losers. So I wouldn't count it as a victory. So now we come to the time for your final piece, the piece you're going to have to play us out, that we'll put production under, music under, whatever is most appropriate. What have you got?
I wrote an angry open letter poem to Zac Efron because I'd had a dream that he was supposed to be my first kiss and he was not. So this was how I got out my frustration.
Wow. Okay. So Samson's in the dirt and we're on to Efron.
Oh, Zac Efron, where were you? Who was this imposter who smelt like Wrigley's Extra and half a can of Foster's? I had pizza to serve you and Twister to play. A new Topshop bra I bought especially that day. Zac Efron, you'd lied. I just turned 14, waiting for my first kiss that you promised me in that dream. Instead of your arrival, you'd sent this awkward kid. Sure, he was tall and gentle, best intentions underlid. But when we kissed, I was nervous. My whole body shook with cold. Gone was back of the hand practice. Gone was the advice I'd been told. There I was, unimpressed, dull and mute instead. Convinced I had no business kissing anyone again. No kicking jump or jazz hand finale. No brash American accent. I had a great night, Charlie. Where were you that night? At some red carpet affair? No excuse will work. You're a dick that doesn't care. A no-show and a fake. You're a disappointment at best. Sorry, Zac Efron. I lay my crush to rest.
Oh, wow. Exercising demons like never before. it's more mature than the Samson stuff because you're over it. I mean, there's feminism in that. It's amazing. Yeah. I mean, I'm very impressed by rhyming Jazz Hand Finale with your own name. That's impressive. Jazz Hand Finale, so High School Musical. That's High School Musical, isn't it?
Yeah.
Awkward Kid, Tall and Gentle. If you're listening, mate, that's the feedback. Tall and Gentle. I'd say that's a positive. Awkward Kid. Of course you're a kid. And once
also,
again...
Also, he smelt like... Wrigley's Extra and half a can of Foster's.
Yeah, just to wrap up the perfect circle. Once again, you've got Wrigley's Extra, Foster's, Twister, Topshop, all listed, influencing since day one. It's just constant influencing. There's hashtag Spawn throughout.
She loves the brand.
Spawns throughout. There it was, Charlie Cox with her ridiculous, semi-threatening George Sampson fan, inverted commas, fiction, where it turned out she was living in his house because she was on the run from the police after committing murder. Zac Efron, you got off lightly, mate. Although you singing We're Breaking Free would have taken on a new meaning if she'd written something similar about you. If you listen to the podcast not knowing who George Sampson is, then I frankly admire your commitment. But do Google him and watch his BGT performances during the popular street dance era of Britain's Got Talent before the public moved on to Dogs Who've Been Tricked and then finally Comedians of All People. As well as her books, Charlie has a lockdown newsletter about trying to find love in these quarantine times. It's really funny. It's all about Zoom dates and stuff like that. So go on her Twitter to find all details of how to sign up for that. I also have a mailing list I'm doing, which I copied from her. But mine is just a weekly funny email, I suppose. It's not about trying to find love. You can sign up at reesejames.co.uk if you want to receive that. As ever, subscribe to the podcast. Tell your friends from 2 meters away all about early work. And do give us a rating on Apple Podcasts if you want. I will see you next week.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.